It was a great time for a small provincial club like Motherwell to win the championship, to win the cup. That was something special. That was, again, this is my last game for Motherwell. But I was lucky to make the final. I played in the semi-final, which was against Celtic, and I'd done my ankle ligaments. And it's usually about 4 to 6 weeks to get back. But my last game before the final was the semi-final. It was a closed-door game of the week of the final where I played, and it was okay. And then I couldn't believe the game went into extra time. You only had two subs. We were all panicking because we didn't know the rules. It's stunning when you think about it.
Tom Boyd, thanks very much for doing this, mate. Cali Corner, I think we're up to episode 8 or 9 now. Obviously, huge name amongst the Celtic support, captains, top 10 in a row. Scotland caps, I think you were 72. Ex-Motherwell, Chelsea as well. So it'd be good to speak to you about your career today.
Thank you very much. I thought I'd be number 2.
Number on the podcast?
Number 9's no. I wasn't a goal scorer.
Well, if
number
I knew
two was my number. That's
if I knew you were going to be as easy as this to go on, I would have asked you for the second one.
No problem.
But Tom, maybe start.
Well, when I find the right directions, that's you know, follow up. That's.
I'm glad we established the parking. Wasn't my fault. You'll have.
Glasgow Uni, I think, covered a couple of things in it, so it was my fault.
You'll have contributed to fixing some of the potholes maybe in the city this month.
I think so. I think there's a few there as well.
So I think we'll just start with the game at the weekend, if that's all right. Obviously, it's Monday day, it's probably good sort of towards the end of the week. So, cracking game, I thought, of the weekend. Good for the neutrals anyway, a lot of drama.
It is, but there's no many neutrals inside, Hamden as it was at the time. And they've always said this, to get classic games like that, they keep repeating a game that's Motherwell versus Hibs and it's 6 each, the managers will be pulling their hair out for the defending, right? There are some good goals and there's some quality goals, but for the most part, a lot of it is down to poor defending. All aspects of the game, you know, if it's a good goal, fine, a strike for a distance, but most goals can be can be avoided, I would have thought, you know. But for everybody else, the purists, it was, I'm a defender and I don't like seeing us lose goals. And that's how I hate taking taking in it on the Coopens or something like that with Celtic losing a goal. I don't like doing that. But it happens, as we've seen, if we're not quite on the ball. Great to be through. It certainly keeps the sort of run going that we're on. The momentum that we're sort of building. So that's, these games are just about getting through. Semi-finals always been through, but it'll be remembered for a very open game, which I don't think, as I say, Brendan would have liked.
No, and to be fair to Aberdeen, they had a right go. I think I was anticipating probably, you know, an easier game than it turned out to be. And the first goal was brilliant, great ball for Clarkson. Mielski's put it away quite well. And
yeah.
For there, I think that sort of gave them the confidence to come and have a right go at us.
The strange thing about Aberdeen this season is the performances in cup competitions, you know, Europa League, but it's a cup competition. And the same, they got to the final of the League Cup and the semi-final. You get that in some seasons where teams are very good at knockout situations and cup competitions. Whereas when it comes to league form, you can see that where was that kind of performance? I know they've changed their manager, so that may have been an influence that the lad that's taken over that may have an impact on how they play. Maybe they've got a bit stronger, but he's not going to be there for next year. I think they've got somebody else. So that may have happened. Delighted that we got to the final, and that's obviously where. Playing my nearest and dearest rivals.
I will talk about them at some point, I would imagine. Just looking at the game itself, though, I think maybe even James had come on, made a big difference. Obviously, you've still got a big part to play at the club, it looks like.
Yes, and I think Brendan mentioned that, you know, in terms of the best player. It's harder when, and I think what when the manager sees James as coming on, having an impact, that I don't think he can start a game, so. Sometimes it is harder. It's easier to come on as maybe players are getting tired and that kind of thing. And so James was certainly someone who had a massive impact, and he's had a good contribution in the games that he has come on. So it's up to Brendan to see what time he would bring him on. I'm surprised he didn't bring him on a wee bit earlier in the Derby game just recently. Obviously there's other players that I think are ahead of him. And the manager sees them being ahead of them, and that's why they won't start. So, James has served as well down the years. I think most people would agree with that. We scored some important goals for us, and that was another one.
Oh, absolutely. They were saying when he came on, that's him. Well, he was already third sort of highest for honours and trophies won at Celtic.
Yeah.
So if we win the double this year, which obviously hopefully will, then James will go into second place ahead of Billy McNeil, man behind Bobby Lennox. So he's got a chance.
It shows you young boys like yourselves, you know, it's great to be a Celtic supporter just now, isn't it? You know what I mean? When you were, if you were born in the '90s, sorry, no, born in, come through the '90s, where I was playing in them, and come through, halfway through that, and in 1992, but it was a little bit more barren than what we're used to now, and that's a great time to be a Celtic supporter.
No, I agree, and we're definitely going to get to that.
We still have our moans, we still have our moans and groans and stuff like that about things. We all want perfection, and you'll never get that in a lot of games. So it's great in terms of, you know, James helping out and all the rest of it, and he's sort of the old school, but he's taking over. Was it Bruni's mantle of having so many? Is he still top then?
So Bruni's tied with James, they're both on 20.
Oh, right, okay.
So they're third, and then
I'm sure there'll be a wee bit of banter between the
22. Sorry, I think they're on. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure I think they're on 22. McNeil's on 23 and Bobby Lennox on 25.
So does that mean James can be as a legend and can play in our legends game? And I'm trying to plug here to get some good players in here.
Let him fucking finish his career first.
I know that.
On the tap up here. But no, I'm originally from Saltcote, so it'll be bittersweet for me. I was sort of saying to the boys, if somebody takes over Bobby, then, you know. But if it's going
to... Listen, it happens. It doesn't matter. What Bobby has done is different to James, and it's different eras. We're having a great time, as we did in the 60s with Bobby and all the boys under Jock Stein. And that was unbelievable. That was probably even better. I mean, you see what they won. You know, there's the one wee medal there that's above all and surpasses... Until that was won again, that surpasses everything that everybody else has won for how many they collect. That one wee medal, as Paul Lambert has got, the manager for the Legends game has got, that's outstanding, winning the European Cup one. So that's certainly, you know, Bobby was part of that team, so that's something you can never take away from him. And we, I think everybody at the club hold that dear in their hearts for what they've done for us. Group of young boys, a local kind of boys, apart from Saltcote, right, you know. I cycled down, route for the Kano Foundation last year, and it would have been a doddle if Bobby had stayed in Glasgow. We had to go that extra 30 miles down that way.
Well, you got to see the coast and the view and all that. It's beautiful.
Breathing out your backside is not as good as taking a wee stroll down the beach, you know what I mean?
So... What about the Lisbon Lions, and how old would you have been in 1967? Like, is that when
two? No, 1.5 actually.
All right, so you wouldn't have remembered.
Well, I wouldn't have remembered, but apparently my dad took me to Celtic Park when they come back. Me and my brother's a year older, so my dad, he says he took us down. There's no video evidence, there's nothing. Nowadays, that's another great thing that you've got nowadays in terms of what we had away back in the past. See the amount of football you can watch and see, whereas... You didn't get that then, and even further back was even worse. It's a different period, a different time. So 65, I was born, and I would be two when not knowing anything really about it at that age.
Right,
but obviously you learn very quickly.
Aye, so maybe when you were starting to get into fit, but the Lions would have been maybe on their way out, and it would have been Dalglish not coming in, would it have? Like, who was your early influences when you were watching the game?
Yeah, I think by the time I'm going with my dad, I'd probably be 8, 9, 10, those kind of things. And then it was, we'd go, my dad go over and drink a few drinks with his pals, and then depends if it was them, the buses free that, you know, where we stayed in Broomhouse. It's only 10 minutes into Parkhead, and so we're just waiting on a phone call from my dad in the pub to see if there was any space available for us to get in, you know what I mean? So we've been around that, and then I got out in the football. Obviously I've been as a school team. It was St Bridget's and Bayliston, up to Holy Croat, St Ambrose and Coco Bridge. But that caused me to miss quite a few games. I couldn't get to games as often as I can because
You're playing yourself.
You're playing yourself. If school was in the morning, or your boys' team, I was Auchin Gill boys' club in Easterhouse, went to Celtic after that. So you're playing football on a Saturday, you know, when Celtic are playing. So it was, it couldn't get to as many games as would have liked, I would have hoped. But certainly the early influences, obviously for me, were the ones I can remember, Danny McGrain and guys like us, you know, outstanding players. Kennedy was just towards the at the beginning, or the end of his career at Celtic and stuff like that, you know. So it was the next stage after those lines there, so I never really seen their lines.
And obviously when you have played for Celtic and obviously ambassador and all that, you presumably pals with Danny McGrain, so you speak about their days and how he influenced you as a player and anything like that. What's that like?
I don't know if Danny's got any pals and stuff. No. I've met him quite a few. I've met him quite a few times. He does the same sort of stuff. He actually is based in the number 7 lounge for match days, where he's the Celtic pools host a table, and Danny's in there hosting the table. As a wee bit younger, a wee bit fitter, can manoeuvre round about the stadium. And I tried to get through quite a few lounges. There's not enough of us now, so we're trying to get other bodies in if there's any ex-players out there, legends that want to come along. I've seen Danny in so many times, and yeah, he's another one. He's up there as a world-class player, as all the lines were. You know, he was the next generation, and he's a world-class player that Danny was outstanding.
Aye, before my time, obviously, but as you know yourself, and a Celtic fan, you do get taught the sort of history of the players, and I think he was involved in the sort of backroom team when Martin O'Neill and that was there, and he would sort of talk about him in sort of great regard as well.
It's great. I was looking back in the Celtic's greatest ever team, and it obviously becomes the Lions heavily influenced in that, and that's without doubt. But there's guys before then that nobody, not of them, you know, you heard, looking back... But we didn't see videos of them as much as what you see, what you've got now, in instant and replays within seconds or of incidents, you know what I mean? So I think some of the younger or the older ones missed out on being a part of that, because there wasn't a lot of footage of that, of players going by, you know what I mean? So, yeah, there's, you know, you can't argue with who we've got in our greatest ever team. They're all outstanding.
Aye, no, absolutely. I think we will get to that, but you mentioned Celtic there. I didn't know that you were Celtic before you were in Motherwell. Was that the path?
There's a myth here, and I don't know who started this. No,
it might have been Danny McGrain, the way you're talking
about.
No, it
might have been that. No, I don't know why that people think that I was a Motherwell supporter. I think maybe because I came through it, and I didn't come through the ranks at Motherwell. I was there as an S form for 2 years. One year, I think. And then I signed YTS. But my school was St Bridget's. I played for St Bridget's. I went, played for Auchin Gill. I played for Celtic Boys Club for 2 years, under 15s and under 16s, because Auchin Gill disbanded for, at that time, that age group I was in. They started back up, but I promised I was coming into Auchin Gill.
Right.
Into Celtic. And then the opportunity, I hadn't signed S form for Celtic, so under 16, they only went to under 16. I moved on then to Motherwell, still at school, high school, went to school for a couple of years, just in sixth year. And then once I finished school, I went and signed with ITS, youth training scheme as that was, was playing first team football within the year.
Who was it that signed you? Was it like a scout or was it the management team? Like how?
Yeah,
how
well, through, I got a trial with Motherwell, and Frank Connor was the assistant manager to Big Jock Wallace. Somebody just mentioned this, and I never even thought of this, that my three managers that I had under at Motherwell were all ex-Rangers boys. It was Big Jock, obviously, Jock Wallace, Bobby Watson and Tommy McLean. That was the three guys that I played under. Bobby was only there 6 months, he gave me my start. I never played under Jock. Frank left shortly after I signed. He went to come to Celtic, and it was Jock's parting moment that I left Frank, he got Celtic, he came in, and he went to Rangers after that, so they left. And then Bobby Watson took over, and by February, March, I got my debut, because Motherwell were rotten. Seriously, I was. I get Player of the Year that year.
Well,
I think I get four awards for sort of man of the match kind of thing. I think you feel sorry for me or something. A wee young boy, the rest of the team were getting relegated. That's a wee story, but anyway, we can tell you about that later.
I know, I was going to ask you about your Motherwell days, because when I seen the Cup final team, there was a few good players in there, to be fair, like yourself, O'Donnell, I don't know, Ferguson was there, and a couple of others.
David Cooper as well, no, David experienced Cooper. Legs, which I think when David came, it helped me. At that time, I was a fullback, so it helped me with his ability on the ball. There was still Bobby Russell never made the team. Experienced big Craig Patterson in the back. He was a good player for Motherwell at that time. Ian Ferguson up front, Colin Neal, a few others, you know, Jim Griffin and all that. Ali Maxwell performed heroics and goals. But I thought he was at it when he got injured, but that's another story I could do.
What was the highlights at Motherwell then in terms of either the sort of the dressing room antics or like in moments, obviously the Scottish Cup final was Aberdeen.
Oh, that's four, so but that was my last game for Motherwell.
Not a bad game to go out
on. I know. I started playing, I think it was 18 with Motherwell. And by the time I was 19, I was captain. I was the youngest captain, I think, at the time.
Wow.
It was, I think, forced on us. As I say, the rest of the team, we weren't that very good, so I was a young boy coming through. I'd been captain with my club teams, Auchengill and my school teams and all that kind of thing. Captain most teams that I managed to play for. Didn't do it at Chelsea, it was only just 6 months. A baptism of fire for me at that time, at a young age, to be a captain, a young boy just learning your trade and stuff, you know. I think they seen the prospect in me. But I was a different player then in terms of where I played. I was a sweeper. I don't remember what a sweeper was, or do you know?
The lazy defender, basically, was sitting behind the centre half.
Well, I didn't want to go and, you know, he did the ball and get my nose broken like all the big centre forwards used to hit. Centre half side when you could elbow somebody away back in those days. So I just stayed at the back and just mopped up everything. But it was an easy game.
Aye, the Beckenbauer of Motherwell, I think you used to call you, was it?
No, when you see me play, it wasn't the Beckenbauer. No, it was mainly like Jimmy Smith in the corner or something, you know, but no Beckenbauer. I had a good learning thing through my time there at Motherwell, and eventually, maybe at that time or a year earlier, I was leaving at the end of my contract. I went to sign a new contract for Motherwell, and for my agent and was talking to a few teams. So, it was just the timing was right. Wouldn't have been ready to play for Celtic away back, seeing when I was a young boy, 18, 19, 20. I wasn't good enough for a Celtic team.
Mm-hmm.
But as I learned and got good experience and developed and became a fullback rather than a centre-back, but one of my best years for Celtic, and was up as, I think it was Gascoigne at Beatman, player of the year, was when I played the sweeper for Celtic, next to John Hughes. And then Alan Stubb comes in. So I like playing in that position. I mean, Martin put me back there a couple of times. Letting big Bobo go and header, big Johan Mjalby go and header a couple of times. But then I get injured and I couldn't get back in the team.
It happens.
I was getting too old.
And what about, you mentioned the captaincy at Motherwell, like, what's that like for you as a young boy? Like, do you have to take on additional responsibilities in terms of, I don't know if you're involved with helping players with contracts or just organising team nights out or what?
No, but not that time. A 19-year-old, you know, but when you know where to go and stuff, you know. At Motherwell, you couldn't afford that anyway. Honestly, the wages were on. I was on £26 a week as Motherwell on the YTS. So that was what my weekly wage was.
That's probably what you've paid in parking the day here.
I need to get a bank loan to get next. And I was saying to my daughter, I said, I'll take the training. No, you're away up the other side of the town, thinking it's Cali. Glasgow, Cali. So yeah, I could have got the training, walked up to Queen Street or something like, you know. But my wages at that time, that was the first season that the YTS was brought in, and Motherwell obviously short of money at that time, real short of money. Then they snapped it up, and so by the end of the season, I was Bobby Watson. I was on £26 a week for the YTS.
Wow. Yeah. Change days now, I think.
Jim, I was speaking to Jim Craig just the other night, and he was telling me he was cheaper when he was playing. I think his was about £12 or something, you know, in the 60s or something.
I don't know what that would be with inflation, right enough, but
it's still not a lot. It's still not a lot. It got me enough to get my bus fare to Brimhurst up to Motherwell.
It all worked out in the end anyway, Tom.
No, no.
What about the cup final then? Like, it was all three each, the two McLean brothers. It was actually my mate that sort of said to me about this, one of the boys that was involved with the Bobby Lennox statue campaign. So I think maybe their dad passed away maybe no long before the game.
It was just the week of the game.
Week of the game, yeah. Right. So did any of that factor into, like, the emotions of the game?
I think it factored into both managers. When you win, and we had the minutes of applause or something, you know, for both teams, and they certainly were out with the respect of the situation, and I think both managers, you know, regardless, would have been a bit subdued in the celebrations. I think Tommy was as well. He enjoyed it for a wee bit, but I think he tried to play it a bit low key, and I think that was probably the right way about it. But in terms of the celebration and the enjoyment of it, we as players certainly could do that, and we certainly did. So it was a great time, you know, for a small provincial club at Muddle to win the championship, to win the cup. That was something special. That was, again, this is my last game for Muddle, but I was lucky to make the final. I played in the semi final, which was against Celtic, and I'd done my ankle ligaments, and it's usually about 4 to 6 weeks to get back. And so my last game before the final was the semi-final. There was a closed door game of the week of the final where I played, and it was okay. So, and then I couldn't believe the game went into extra time. I'm looking this is the time as well that you only had two subs, right? One of them was Stevie Kirk, who was super sub, and he came on. He scored in every round apparently in the quarterfinals, and the knock penalty shout, and so he was our backup goalkeeper. Ali Maxwell should not have played on once he got injured because he had a burst spleen, right? So he was, and I took the last goal in normal time, Darren Jackson scored it, and he's not come off his line quick. I'm giving him dolls abuse, not realising how badly injured that he was, you know? And Steve Kirk didn't want to go in goals for the cup final and stuff like that. So he's running away from the bench to say, I'm not going on as a goalkeeper. So eventually come on, and he got the winning goal. A typical header for Kirky. So it was, I was touch and go. And the manager just blanked me, as I says, when I looked to the bench, I was starting to cramp up in extra time. And I'm shouting him, come off, because we also had another substitute that day. That was Colin Neal. He was injured and wasn't fit.
Mm-hmm.
But he gave, because Colin had played and every round, he gave him a start on the bench. So we were actually only had one sub on the bench.
Oh, Jesus.
As I compared to two. Because Colin Neal came on for the last couple of minutes, say the extra time. That's when he came on.
Did you need to be in the squad to get a medal or something? Was that?
I think something like that as well. I think that's one of the reasons. I think that now I think everybody in the squad or whatever, I think, gets that, you know, the players in the backroom staff possibly, I'm not sure. But at that time, it was only the ones that were there on the bench that would get a medal. So maybe that was the thinking of something. But it left us a little bit thingy. But then I'd say that maybe. So that was luxury to subs when you look back to the lines. They only had one sub, and that was a goalkeeper in 67. So, you know, we were well off in relative terms compared to what they were if there was an outfield player injured or something, you know. But just astonishing now when you see what we had five, six the other week there, and everybody was panicking, thinking, well, you made too many subs. We were all panicking because we didn't know the rules. But then you look to think that you only had one sub, or no subs, and sorry, outfield players in Lisbon. That is stunning when you think about it.
Even when you're talking, that's only about 20 years ago, I know, for two subs.
That's right, yeah. 91, it's a wee bit longer now. That's maybe near 40 years, isn't it?
Is it?
No, it's 30. I don't know. 30.
30 odd.
We'll split the difference.
Aye, cheers. You saved me there. Had to turn it into fucking Rachel Riley for a second.
It's all right. We don't need to worry about maths.
And then you mentioned the celebrations. Can you remember where you went that night? Was it back to the tavern in Motherwell, was it? Or?
No, it was back to my wee pub that I used to drink in. The Roundtree pub in Uniston. And I says, if we win the cup, I'll bring the trophy back. And I took it back.
Oh, that's amazing. That would be class.
That was great. We had a good wee time. I went in. I wasn't one for getting into towns and with the rest of the boys. Occasionally, with my girlfriend at the time, well, now wife, Rona, we'd occasionally get into town, but we'd rather just stay up local and in the wee pub that everybody knew me as well. So, I was in there and went back on that night, and it was a special night.
I
can't remember it, but it was a special night.
A lock-in, presumably.
I'm sure we'll get kicked out, you know. But I think I'd had enough by then.
You didn't lose the cup, anyway.
No, I've done that. I nearly lost it once when it was It was a League Cup with Celtic when it was down at Jersey. But that's another story.
Aye, we'll get to that hopefully.
That's another story.
And when you had you already agreed the contract with Chelsea, or did that come after the final?
There was a lot of complications with that move. I actually could have moved before the cup final. There was a quarter final in which I scored in. I scored a goal with Rumi Morton. It was a replay, and we played down at Capello. Mm-hmm. And there was a certain Brian Clough in the stand that day, and he was looking at me. And he Muddle gave me permission to go down to speak to him. And I went and spoke to him, but obviously Brian, absolute legend and manager, but he was having problems with drink, and he was turned up at the meeting, absolutely steaming and stuff like, you know. So I'm a wee boy for what the old know and all the big things and stuff like, and I just didn't take to that, you know.
Aye.
So
was he at Forest at the time?
He was at Forest, and I think it was a guy called, was it Pat Fenton, that was his assistant, I think. So he was there, and it was me and my agent, and we met in London. And had a wee chat, and I could have been playing in Nottingham Forest got to the final for the FA Cup that year. That was the if you remember, the Gascoigne tackle for Spurs. He played Spurs, and Gascoigne tackled somebody, should have been sent off for it, but he got injured, so he came off in the first couple of minutes. I might have been playing in that rather than the Scottish Cup final. So that just shows you how things work out in fate. Might have never then got to Celtic, you know. That there's loads of things.
There's those sliding door moments.
Oh, there is. There is. There's plenty within that. And you see, I've always considered myself a lucky person. I think it worked out. There we're going to talk about the Chelsea thing. I was speaking to the manager at the time, it was Bobby Campbell, and he had the plans to play. There was a few other... McCarr was the boy's name.
Graham Lussault and Dennis Wise.
Graham Lussault was a young boy, so he wasn't giving it. Dennis Wise was there, Andy Townsend.
Vinnie Jones.
Big Paul Elliott was getting signed. Well, put Phil Elliott went down.
All right.
To Chelsea at the same time. Vinnie Jones played. Stevie Clark.
Stevie Clark.
Stevie Clark was there. Big Dave Besson in goals. I was speaking to the manager, Bobo Campbell, and then... So we've arranged the sort of things to happen. Then he resigned. So I was left.
Your wages wasn't.
I had no debt on there. No, I don't think it'd be coming from Motherwell. No, but that's what Brian Clough did. Sank me if I was a rich man, you know. Then Fiddler on the Roof. I don't know if you know. You'll not know that. So go and Google it. And Brian Clough sang that to me. So going down to tell, I thought that move was going to be off. You know. But at the time, the caretaker was Gwyn Williams and Bates. There was the chairman.
Ken Bates.
Ken Bates. And so they just continued with that. Well, I think who was the manager, I don't know if Ian Porterfield came in. Ian Porterfield came in, but I don't know if he was still in the books as a youth coach there. And I think it promoted. I'm not sure on that. But somebody said that to me, and I take it that it was right. So I get signed for Chelsea, and just went down the same time as Paul Elliott was there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I was the manager signing or whether I was the chairman signing, you know, as was very, it's very prevalent nowadays, I would think, with a lot of clubs, that it's the managers just to deal with the players they get given.
Aye.
You know, so that was how I signed for Chelsea.
And when you went in there, obviously, like you said, you'd gone from sort of Motherwell, sort of East End, Glasgow, sort of, and then you're into London, like the big city of London, and like the players you've talked to, there's a lot of quality players there. Did you feel a difference in the levels? I mean, you went to train, did you think, oh, I'm good enough to be here, you know,
No, I felt I was good enough. I had a few caps for Scotland, just a few at that time. So I knew where I was going and the players and the level. I think the thing that struck me in terms of how I had a bit of pace when I was, most certainly was in Scotland, And going down there, you're no as quick. Well, you're as quick as you are, but compared to the rest, it's no as striking. You know, the rest are all as quick, or quicker even. Some of the boys were lightning. So that wee asset that you had as well is maybe not as prevalent as what it is in other games, or where I was in Scottish football at that time. So you just had to adjust in terms of... I'd be a wee bit more streetwise in terms of playing games, but it went okay. I was playing regular. Was left out for a wee bit, but I think I'd started through illness when the Souls came in. But then I came back in, but I think the last six games or something I played. My last game was a victory at Anfield against Liverpool. We beat them, I think, 2-1 it was. And we were sitting, I think it was fifth in the league, fifth or sixth in the league. I'm not saying that they finished 14th when I left. I'm only saying this, you know what I mean?
You had Ian Rush in your back pocket, did you?
I'm only saying that, it was the team melted. They just kind of played without me, you know what I mean? That was just a completely out of the blue move coming back up to... I'd come back up to Scotland.
Well, but before we get to Celtic, was there any good memories for Chelsea? Like you were saying, some of the names are likes of Vinnie Jones. I'd imagine he likes a good drink and must be interesting.
No,
on a night out.
There's a few boys like a good drink. I won't mention names, but certainly there's a few in the team. But I think Vinnie felt, I think, a wee bit out of place in that when he was at Wimbledon. He was one of the main men, and all that kind of. And you come into a club like Chelsea, and he's no initially he's just a new signing, so he's no got that same influence as what he had. And I think it was massive, and the Wimbledon team that he was there with. So coming to that kind of club like Chelsea with the players that were there, I think he was a wee bit quieter and reserved. He was maybe thinking about his acting career or something. Like, once he started films.
You didn't want to follow him into Hollywood, Tom? No.
Listen, not quite, no. I'm not got the same level of diving skills as Silver, but that's another story.
yeah, we'll get to that probably. So, back up the road, Cascarino went down to Chelsea, yeah. You came up, and then, as you've mentioned, some of the younger Celtic fans maybe no, we weren't even sort of finishing second back in those days in the sort of early 90s, so a bit of a barren spell. What was that like for you? Well, first, what was it like coming up? You must have been realising your dream at that point.
Well, as I say, the manager in Portfield called me in to Stamford Bridge, and which was strange in itself because we trained at a wee place at Hallington's, about 20 minutes from Stamford Bridge. It's right next to Heathrow Airport. And I'm thinking, well, why am I getting in there? It was a Tuesday, and I'm thinking, it's just strange. He's not said, just manager wants a word with you, come into the park. Okay. So we went into the office. And that's when he mentioned Celtic were interested in me. Before he'd finished, I was on the plane back up. And just, that was my dream, you know what I mean? That was a completely out of the blue because, as I mentioned, playing in the team, winning at Anfield, and I'm thinking, why is this coming about? What's he doing? So the strange thing is there's quite a lot of people think this was pre-planned. I think from elsewhere that Cascarino and Tom Boyd was always going to Celtic, but they just had to wait a wee bit, which is strange because for people to realise that Cascarino, I think, was our highest paid player, most expensive signing at the time. And so for him to fail within 6 months, and he failed dramatically.
Did he not score? He only scored two.
Two goals. And one of them actually came off his heel. Was that the one? His first one against Hearts. That shows you how absurd that scenario is. But the scenario of me coming to Celtic within 6 months was, for me, amazing. But I would never have wished. I thought I'd lost my opportunity, certainly at that time. To play for Celtic. I thought there was rumours before, but nothing materialised. Wasn't given any permission to speak to MD. So that was completely out of the blue, absolutely delighted. And obviously in the plane, straight up, I think it was on Thursday, I came straight up, just to finalise things. And actually the press conference was there. There was nothing signed and there was a press conference already organised. But listen, I was signing no matter what.
Oh, brilliant memories. And who would it, was it Liam Brady, was
the
gaffer?
Liam Brady was the manager, and obviously, in fact, there was three guys at the table for the press conference.
Danny McGrain, one of them, was it?
No, it was my namesake, Thomas Boyd. That was my dad.
Oh, nice.
So my dad was on the table, the table this, we were sitting in with Liam Brady and myself. And then I think my dad was only asked one question. He just absolutely beaming, so he was. Oh. Father beaming, loved it, you know what I mean? That your son got to play for, you know, or getting to play for the team that you always wanted to, or watch, you know? So, yeah, it was a great moment for me. And obviously, that time, and everybody talk about it, the younger ones maybe not know, but at North Stand was the jungle. And running out in front of the jungle, where my first game, I think, was against East Fife. It was a team in black, I was a young boy, a team in black and red or something. Sorry, black and yellow. So I think it was East Fife. And as a young boy, you're pushed in the front because you couldn't see anybody else's at the height of me. So it was a wee surreal moment that I managed to get out there, and all the legends that I know of that I had to play in the park, you know. And would have been happy with one game at Celtic Park, but thankfully I played a few more.
You done all right, I think.
But as you say, the early part of it, I've signed thinking, and Celtic were playing quite well that time. I think they had a poor start or something, but they started playing. We won quite a few games until we lost the semi-final against Rangers. So we were going okay, but then that was the height of our problems financially, and it started to go downhill with obviously the quality of signings that were afforded us. You know, I think probably that was Liam Brady's probably biggest problem, is that the money that Liam got was quite a sum at that time for where we were, and the big money that was spent on the players. For Cascarino, for Stuart Slater, Gary Gillespie, they never had a massive impact that you're expecting, you know, like a Henry Larson. Henry wasn't a lot of money, to be fair. But other guys that have come into our club, you know, for big money, and they've had an impact, whereas they completely flopped. And we then went into the spiral that ended up with, I tell this to young boys and kids, and you'll not believe it, that in a period at Hampden, well, a lot of them will be there, that we played 17 games and only won two of them. There was about 12 draws, right enough, you know. So that was it was a tough time. That was Hampden. Nobody wanted to be there. Horrible season. Only positive, we won the League Cup, but the Scottish Cup at the end at 95. So
was that against Airdrie? I mean, Big Pierre.
Big Pierre's goal, Tosh, his trusty left foot, whipping them in. It was a special moment. A very nervy moment, because we'd lost the cup against Raith Rovers, championship team as it is, the now, championship team. So there was a lot of nerves there when we went to Hampden.
I know, that would be my first memory of Celtic lifting the trophy. I was 87, That was the first one that I think we watched it in the pub, and then obviously scored a great header, and like you're saying, the expectations there to win, because you're playing a team that's obviously not the same. I don't think Airdrie were in the lower divisions then as well, I think.
Yeah, but they had a lot of good players. It's like Raith had a lot of experience in their team, and a lot of good players, promising players coming up through. So they weren't as bad as, you know, a championship team by name, but obviously, they built the strength in the squad to come into the division, you know. So, in the same area, they had some decent players in their team, you know, experienced players. The Airdrie game was not a great game at all.
No.
And I think whether that was just the nerves of everybody knowing what it meant, with, you know, first trophy in 6 years. When you think of what we James Forrest has won and Scott Brown and all these boys, it's amazing, absolutely amazing. Bobby Lennox and all these kind of things, that barren spell that we had, you know. And I thought I was coming up to win, well, maybe not win leagues automatically, but compete, and we weren't even competing.
Aye. No, you mentioned the sort of the winning there. I remember years ago, I've drank about the Gallagher a lot of the time, and I was in Baird's Bar, and I forget guy's second name, right, but I was talking to him about that day, and he was sort of saying, obviously, Tommy Burns, a local boy, and apparently he had rerouted the open bus, top bus up the Gallagher, and all right. The punters were coming out of Baird's and that, and he was talking, this is like one of the best moments of his life. So what's that like for you as a fan and a player, obviously, when you see that?
Oh, it's outstanding. You know, I think that's what some people say they miss, the Celtic players, was beginning to get an open top bus. It never happens that a lot. Doesn't happen. It didn't happen. Like, obviously, the problems and the troubles stemming for a wee while back. They didn't want it to happen. So for us to get that opportunity, and Tommy made sure he milked that. He got it to all his friends, pubs or whatever, you know what I mean? And that was special. But it was nice to see a big, massive smile on Celtic fans' faces, because it had been so barren for so long. And the following season, we had a trophy at the front of the stadium, at the front of the pitcher. So that was nice as well.
I know, that's class. And then that kind of leads us on then. Obviously, 97-98 season, you're part of the captain of the team that stopped the 10 then. So what was it like when Janssen got announced as the manager? Like, you, honestly, as players, and you're one of the senior players at that point, what are you kind of talking about? Were you aware of his international career or who he was? Or?
Not really. I don't think he ended up. I think when played, there wasn't the star man in the team. You know, it was Johan Cruyff, I think, away back in 74, and when I think he played in that. So you didn't know too much, and he was more a sitting midfielder, you know, that controlled the game and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't think as a young boy you're as intelligent enough to notice these kind of things, you know. But once you get told, and you're trying to do a wee bit of research on it and find out, my goodness, he's you know, something special in terms of what he's achieved. Got a couple of World Cups and stuff, so we know he was a player, and so you know what he was talking about when they, and I think that's something that a lot of people want is, you know, the people that are, whoever's taking over is in charge, knows what they're talking about and know about football, and certainly that's what Wim had, and he's an abundance, you know, in terms of the stature of the man. And I think that grew into that kind of thing, that role. Again, belittled by the press here of who and all this kind of thing. But we were, like most people, we were like that as well, because we didn't know too much about him, but did take long to find out about it.
Aye, it's the same when Ange came as well, isn't it, right?
Yeah.
We as fans, and we kind of bought into that a bit, you know, who is this guy? But obviously quickly you could see with the style of play that something special there.
And it's harder nowadays because of the social media side of things, and, you know, you'll be able to find out very quickly what a player, a person or something has. There'll be a video, there'll be some, you know, you'll get the stats of what he was as a manager, you know. So it's harder for somebody to, you know, come under the radar. And basically that's what Ange was, you know what I mean? He was somebody that came under the radar, you know. It worked out for us very, very well. But as you say, a new manager, you know, that a lot of us didn't know about, but he had an impact with his signings immediately. And that was, at the time, I get the captaincy. And I don't think there would be too many options of captain. I think probably myself or Alan Stubbs would have been the two. Only, I would think, with the players that were left at that time, before we signed the other ones, mm-hmm. that would be the only candidates to choose from. Then
Stubbs wasn't had long signed either.
That's a previous season. But then, and I keep mentioning this about, you talk about managers, different managers, and how what can impact. It's all about the players they sign. You know, you look at the players that are brought on, and the impact that they have. Henrik went on to be outstanding for us, but to be able to get a European Cup winner for the year before, and Paul Lambert, big Matt Reaper was an internationalist, brilliant. Craig Burley, that was so good for us that year. Mm-hmm. Stephen Mahe come in. So the team was building, and there was players in there, and they talk about the roles of captain. It gets easier the better players that are in, and you know, you don't have to do as much talking to a Henrik Larsson who knows the game and knows where to go and all that kind of. So it becomes a hell of a lot easier. We were discussing just a wee bit before, but the rest in terms of the social side, that's some you organise, you can then words with the manager and stuff like that, you know. So, it becomes less of a burden when you've got better players around you. And that was something that Vim's impact had with the players, and why we were able to compete.
So it was Wim that was spotting these players, and it wasn't Jock Brown or.
Well, I don't think Jock Brown would have any inkling of a Mr. Certain Henrik Larsson, in terms of knowing that his contract was up and you could have got him for $650,000. I think Wim had to have a wee bit of insight into that one, which obviously Feyenoord being his club and his team and all that. So I think he would have had an insight to that. So yeah, the impact. I'm sure Jock would have had maybe an influence in maybe a Craig Bully signing or something like that, knowing some of the up and coming players through from Scotland. Mm-hmm. And Craig certainly was one of the players, and he was immense for us that season. Absolutely immense. I think him and Jackie actually shared one great player of the year and for the sports writers and one great for the players. I'm not sure who got which, but certainly that was he came in and done ever so well for us. As to win the league, to win the, everybody's got to have an influence and an impact. So it was great that you know, the players that came in really hit it off.
They had the ground running by the seams of things. What was it like? You probably get.
Well, I know the first two games, but then I don't.
We'll forget about them.
I think we've mentioned that so many times with Henrik's first pass, but that's we'll let him. We'll still slag him. Don't worry.
He might be watching. We'll be kind to him because I was going to ask you. Probably you might get fed.
I've already said he's about a legend, so that's enough, right? You're getting slagged, Larson.
When Larson came in, right, his first couple of training sessions, like how long is it before you are like, fuck me, this guy is unbelievable.
But I think he get better as he went on. I think the first game, and I think he says this as well, when he was watching him, he was getting interviewed with Chris, he played in the left wing. And I think a couple of times he would drift out there. I think he was told, look, go and have an impact closer into the middle kind of thing, you know. So it was just the style that he was wanting to play. The other players that we had, I think Tommy Johnson and Darren Jackson, they were more the strikers at the time. Wee Simon was a great foil for Henrik as well. So there was other options there for him. But eventually Henrik was the one that was a sort of main striker. But I think the burden and how he get better through Chris Sutton and, you know, John Hartson and stuff like that, I think he would have flourished under a Mark Viduka. He's got, you know, a big forward boy that took a lot of the pressure, and Henrik could have done the kind of things that he wants to go and get involved in other areas, you know what I mean? So why he scored 50 goals in that treble season. So we'll keep Henrik in the background. He done all right.
He done no bad. And I think like that season, probably one of the you went on a right good run after the first two defeats, to be fair to say. But yeah. I think the Rangers game at New Year, was it fair to say that was a huge turning point? We won that game.
Especially, I think at the time we were, I think, 4 points behind or something, and I think they would have went 7 ahead. So we had to stay in touch. I think it would have been very difficult to win the league if we hadn't won it that week. And there was a lot of significance on it that the last 9 years, whoever had won and not lost at that
time, won the league.
Won the league, mm-hmm. Which we didn't know of as well until we found out later. And but it was a game that was almost replicating the scenario that Tommy got sacked for in terms of the football that he wanted to play. But we totally dominated the game. We should have been well ahead. We didn't get that through, obviously, great goalkeeping. Thankfully, we never conceded, which was a problem. And maybe somebody made a wee mistake and stuff like that, you know, in the kind of games, the important games. Thankfully, Craig Bully and then Paul Lambert with the belter at the end. It was mighty relieving, I should say.
Is that the best Celtic Rangers goal you've seen in person? Or? No.
No.
Oh, Larson's.
You've got to say Larson's.
Aye, well, after you're slagging him, you have to.
I better come back with something quicker than that. I'd say Henrik's the goal. Talk to Chris. I think he was trying to say it was something else or something.
I would put Lambert's up there with Larson's. It was 30 yards, 2.5 volley, top bin.
You cannot take anything away.
First goal for Celtic as well.
Aye, you can't take anything away for Will, but the technique and the skill and the composure. Now, that kid, not with a Paul, but in fact, Paul done it the following week against Motherwell. I think he struck one equally as good. We don't remember that as much. I don't know why. I wonder. But for Henrik's goal against him in the 6-2 game was quite stunning. To have the awareness, and he obviously plays it down, as whatever you heard him, he plays it down. I said, and he said to Chris, he said, did you see how far the goalkeeper was out? But then to have that ability to chip it and flick it over the top of the goalkeeper with those thoughts, you know. Generally you say, go, I'll put it around him, I'll put it, you know. It was, it shows you the quality of strikers, you know. Defenders are good defenders and they need concentration. But when you get guys, the quality players and these, and their thought processes and how clear their mind are when they're in those tight situations. It's different now for football, the players at the back, because this playing the ball out for the back. They've got to get used to that more system. When we played, it was an easy out that if you're under pressure, clear your lines, hit Rose Ed, you had a big boy up front, usually, you know, go and hit him, and so you try and hit a target man. So it was didn't seem as stressful watching it, as we did. So it was easy outs for us, you know what I mean? But it's great to see our legend talk about that in terms of how, you know, controlled he was in the situation. That's why I wasn't a goal scorer.
Oh, you scored a couple, didn't you?
Oh, well, I was alluding to earlier, I was a sweeper, I was a stopper of goals. To be a good defender, you need to have good concentration levels, and at times that doesn't happen. That doesn't, and it infuriates me at times. I know the game's different, and I could forearm smash somebody and block them as I did in the 98 Cup final. You get your Scotland tap, I've got the 98 Cup final. Again, it's not a Cup final, World Cup finals, but the opening game against
Brazil.
I done it against Ronaldo, you know.
So R9, aye.
I stopped him, I thought he didn't want him. He was a quick boy. I thought, you know, quicker than me. And so I had to stop him from getting across the front of me because I thought maybe the move would have developed. So I stopped him.
Did you teach that up at Bayliston?
All my time. I always learned that. Just make sure they don't get by you. But you could get away with a couple of things now.
Quite right. On the sort of 97-98 season, then one thing that has been done in folklore is the T-shirts,
yes.
Right? So I'm wanting you to dispel the myth. Let's give me a Cali Corner exclusive here, Tom.
I can't dispel the myth.
Come on, because
there's
multiple rumours.
I know, because the truth is crap. we want to leave it there, right? And we'll sit there, and I wish I had a wee franchise and be able to sell the T-shirts at that time. That would really took off.
Somebody will be reproducing them, probably.
You still get smaller gobs. So I'm not wanting to let MD's thoughts, processes get carried away too much. I'll let you think what you want. Make it what you are.
So
what will be, will be.
If I try and pry it out of you, will you give me it? Paul Lambert was saying it was Tosh McKinley. They've seen the graffiti down at Kilmarnock that would smell the glove. And then there's obviously the rumours about Gorham throwing in the gloves after our game.
There's tons like that. Okay, you can't argue the real reason was we used it as a wee catchphrase, and it was the Kilmarnock thing. Sorry to disappoint you. I don't know, your face is not going alive.
I was desperate to know, because even after that game, right, we would be playing as young boys down the park and we'd be scoring and shouting smell the glove, and the Rangers fans are going, what the fuck does that even mean? And I don't know, it just fucking sounds good. And the T-shirts were obviously class, but the one and the zero.
The only thing that disappoints me about that, and it was good, it was two things. One, Finn leaving so quickly after that was major. But just when I look back in photographs, somebody sent me a lovely drawings of club captains in the time, and every single one of them's on a Celtic strip apart from you.
Because you get that T-shirt,
not smell the glove one, the club's one, that was the official one, the club one, and they all got and left that. We had to put on new T-shirts.
I know,
but it's a small thing for me, and when I look back and I'm going, oh right, you don't realise, you get caught up in the emotions, you get caught up in the thing. First time we've you know, when your legs
were out of practice.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that was just something that would have changed.
I'd
have put the jerseys, the T-shirts on after picking it up. You know what I mean? But that's just a wee thing for me. I don't think it bothered the MD. I don't think MD always knew about it. But when I look back in that, and I see Big Billy in the European Cup with the green and white hoops on, and I see Danny McGrain lifting the Scottish Cup, Roy Aiken lifting this, and you know, and every picture's got the Celtic jersey on. It's a wee point that So if anybody's taking a photo, can you, you know, Photoshop that and put a Celtic strip on it?
Right, somebody will do it for you. I'm sure maybe if we win the league in subsequent years, you, your role and your history, they'll let you out and put the hoops on and lift the trophy, I think.
Oh, don't worry, I've relived that moment millions of times and I've had special memories of it. But the disappointment thing, obviously, of him was huge.
One of the boys wanted me to ask you about that. So, obviously, the rumours are it was today with Jock Brown and the signing policy and all the rest of that. Like, when did yous become aware? Was it after we'd won the league or was it before that? Or?
No, it was after. We knew there was some problems, but we didn't think he was going to resign over it. You know, so hopefully thought that these issues would have been solved. Mm-hmm. A man of his word is it was him, and he told us over officially. We had a testimonial. I don't know if it was a benefit game or testimonial game for George Garrett. Mm-hmm. So we actually had to leave to go to Portugal the next day
after we'd won the
celebration, and then we got told that news, and some players when they want to play and stuff like that, you know what I mean, obviously. I think we were told we had to think better of it and play the game. But it was heartbreaking that, you know, a manager that's won the first trophy first championship for 10 years and he's left for it in the next season. So it was a big one to take for everybody.
It sounds like you would have run for a brick wall for him. Was he really sort of special for you in terms of managing your career?
But I would have done that for every manager I played under, and every game. It was a special game, that one, the St Johnstone game. But as was my debut against St Airdrie, whenever I played for Celtic up in New Jersey, I did the same for Motherwell, for Scotland. I tried my best in every game. I gave everything. Sometimes I was crap. I could hold that up there. You know, I wasn't Henrik Larsson, been great every single week. I gave everything. I tried my best in every single game. For Vim, for Dr. Joe, for Tommy Burns, that was a hard one. We didn't win the championship for Tommy, and that was sad. I think I was more upset about that one than Vim going, but you know, because we'd won the championship, but we hadn't won it for Tommy, you know.
Did you think Tommy ever get over that? Would they ever hop back to, like, no winning the league as a manager? Do you think it didn't bother him?
No, not that I'm sure personally it would have bothered him. Would have loved to have done it, because he gave everything, his heart and soul, to everything he did. And certainly, whether it was at Celtic, whether it was a supporter, a player, a manager, a scout, I think he was the head of youth. Anything he did, became assistant later on. Everything he gave his wholeheartedly. And he's the example, a prime example of what a Celtic player should be. And obviously, it's a wee bit easier when we're Celtic supporters, you know. But if you can follow in Tommy's path, whether it be through his family, his religion, whatever, then you'll not go far wrong.
No, lovely words. We've no touched on any of the Scotland stuff. You sort of mentioned it there. So what is your?
I know, but I don't know if the listeners will be able to see the pictures and see what strip you're wearing. I know what you're going to hark on about.
No. I was going to open up to you.
All right, okay.
So, what's your sort of best memories? Your sort of getting your first cap, or obviously you played in Euro 96, you played in France 98. Like, can you, any stories you can tell us for
Euro 92 as well?
I would have been five or something.
Playing your first game for Scotland was special, but I think it was at a time where there was about 40 call-offs. Scotland, I think, was plagued with at that time, for whatever reason. I don't think everybody was injured. I think at the time, me, big Brian Irvine for Aberdeen, but I didn't start the game. I was on the bench, and it was against Romania. And playing against a certain Mr. Hadji.
Yep.
So he tried to dummy the ball. I hadn't come on long, and he tried to dummy the ball, and I read it, and I won the ball up the line. We came back, and I think Mr. McCoist, he scored the winner. So I was involved in the winning goal in my first game for Scotland, so I was delighted with that. So it gives you a good, and you've done something positive. That's what I was playing. I think he was playing left wing actually. I don't think it was wing back. It was more left midfield, and obviously that's the position I find myself. Absolutely delighted with that, and had a good Scotland career, having made three major championships. I only played the last game in the Euros in '92. Maurice Malpass was an outstanding player for Scotland and a great, reliable player. So I was a young boy coming through. I was about 25 or 26 or something like that by the time I took over for Maurice. So only played the last game. I played the last game, and that was against the CIS, who won 3-0. Paul Meachday scored, Brian McClure, and I think I got Gary McAllister penalty.
Nice.
So maybe they should have put me in early. I'm only saying, you see these things, this is an our play. We're quite lucky.
Well, you'll say it's a few things.
You know what I mean? I know, exactly, yeah.
And what about when you went away with Scotland? Obviously, the early days there with Rangers being so dominant, was there any awkwardness like between the two players? Are you going all right together?
But when you come together, there's a bigger cause, isn't there? You know, you're playing for your national team, and I love playing for my country. I've no Irish roots at all, so I couldn't go that route for obviously the Celtic allegiances and stuff. Scotland was my team, and I love playing for Scotland. And at a time in Scotland, done well, qualified for three majors. So we're on the back of Scotland qualifying for quite a few things. We missed out. I think we missed out in, what was that, America, 94.
We were at Italian 90.
And then obviously then 96 and 98. So just surprised it took us. In fact, we'll never get back to a World Cup right now, haven't we?
Oh, yeah, no.
€2 since from the Twitter, but 20 odd years to get to the first Euros.
Soon, it'll happen soon. Maybe your old mucker, Steve Clark.
I know. Great times, great occasions, and unfortunate. I think certainly the Euros in England in '96, where 10 minutes to go in the last game, we're through.
Is that against Switzerland, was it?
1-0 against Switzerland. Yeah. We drew away Holland. John Collins got away with a handball on the line. I think VR would have spotted that one. And then we get beat. Obviously, the Gary McAllister missed a penalty. I don't know what happened there after that. Somebody dived in and slipped. And I was miles away. And then Switzerland 1-0. And England, I think there were a few goal swings, as you know. So England were 4-0 up against Holland. And we were 1-0 up. And that seen us through. If it had stayed like that. But David Seaman let one through his legs. Yeah. and it was mad about the last few minutes, because we're thinking, like, okay, we're through, don't lose a goal, so just stay safe,
keep it tight.
And then 2 minutes later, get forward. And I remember there was a breakaway for Switzerland, and I think I was marking about four players that were breaking on me. They still never scored.
There you go. I was sitting, I couldn't mind but that game finished there.
That was 1-0, yeah. 4-1 to England against Holland, and 1-0 for us.
So they went calling it through in goal difference, is that what it is in 96?
That shoes of Scotland's no great at goal difference. We did miss it, was it 74 we missed it in goal difference? I'm not done too well with that.
Can we just, I don't know what the word is here, but we'll just allow ourselves to speculate, right, and imagine that if we'd have went through that, because we had a decent Scotland team at the time.
I would have won it, aye.
Aye, all
right. Is that what you're trying to say, no? No.
I was going to ask how far you think we would have got.
Aye, the next round. No, listen, we were decent, and how we got success was that we were very difficult to beat. And we had a solid back three at the time. It was me, Colin Calderwood, and Colin Henry. Henry was a middle winger, I was a left side. That was a regular basis. We had structure in midfield.
Collins,
McStay in occasions. Then Paul, obviously his injury took him out. So we had other guys, Craig Butler was coming through. He wanted to play in the midfield. And in the World Cup, he started as a wing back. He hated it with a passion. And then he scored that goal against Norway in the second game against at Bordeaux as we played. And he just run to the bench to stick two fingers up to Craig Brown. There's what I want to play. So that was the last game against Morocco. I got slagged just there. I'd done the Sahara for the Celtic Foundation, and it was in Morocco. And I was talking to a few boys, nice guys, the guides, the Berbers as they're called, and eventually found out that I was playing in the Morocco game. You've seen the picture of them at the third goal. I think I've dived in a wee bit, like Colin Henry against Gascoigne. The boys lobbed it at the top of me, finished the volley, and oh, what a goal. And he's just started laughing at me. So there's a wee guy, or a big guy called Jamal, and I get texts from Morocco every now and again. Hey, Tommy, say, what about that goal? You're rotten, weren't you? So I get slagged. So a great time.
And what about France 98 then? That must have been unbelievable to go to a World Cup with your national team.
Not just that, but it's like Scotland are doing it. Some of the papers formed up, but I never spoke to them then. Playing in the opening game, the only game that's bigger is the final.
Totally agree.
Everybody watches the opening game because it is
the start of the tournament.
It's now usually the host that start it off.
I think they changed it after that because they were saying it was like fucking 300 million or 500 million that watched that game. And obviously, I was looking at the team, Cafu, Roberto Carlos, Dunga, Rivaldo, Ronaldo 9. Fuck me, what an experience. The best players in the world.
And I don't know if
and yourself, obviously.
Thanks very much. Obviously the game was going well for us and we're sitting at 1-1. And then I had a wee look at, as I say, I blocked Ronaldo and I looked at him and I think he's no right here. Because I think later on in the competition he went on to have some problems.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, playing against Scotland.
Oh, that was the forearm smash, was it?
That's the impact that they had on him. So I could foresee this coming. And I felt sorry for the greatest player in the world at that time, Ronaldo 9 as he was, Fat Ronaldo as some people call him. So I felt sorry for him, so I put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, it was just a ricochet, wasn't it? You couldn't get out of the way.
No, my chest control wasn't as good as some people. I don't play futsal, obviously. You see these people that play that kind of thing. And what's the wee one they call him, the wee tennis one? Table tennis, it's like table tennis, football. They bang it with a ball. They call it, honestly. The skills of these people are unbelievable. I just wanted to launch it into Rose's head, but I couldn't get it there. My chest control was terrible.
What is that like, though? Psychologically,
it's outstanding, to be able to play that in the opening games. There was an anti-climax. We've prepared, we've come with the kilts on, bad idea when it's about 90 degrees or something like, you know what I mean, with kilts on and the shirts and everything. It looked good for Scotland. It did look good. So we've come in after that. We've seen the fans. This is about an hour and a half before the kickoff. Waved to your family and all that kind of thing. So you get into the dressing room, starting and changed, and then you're not allowed out. At that time, you were not allowed back on the park. So we had to warm up in an indoor. It was quite a big area, but it was still an indoor. It wasn't a full-size pitch. It was just a converted room, and they put the rubber stuff that you see in some gyms and stuff like that, you know, they put that on the floor for the state to train on. Mm-hmm. And so we were not allowed out then until we started to walk on the parks. And that was quite a quote for that from the game, was it? Craig Brown, I think, says, was that we were lining up, and all the World Cup winners are all lining up. Craig Brown shouted for a bit, look at that, they're all shouting themselves, excuse the French here. The World Cup winners, the World Cup holders are playing against Scotland. And he's trying to go. But then it was just a try to be a motivational factor for us, you know what I mean? So that was special in terms of going out there. Again, the only thing, a wee moan that I'm going to put in is that when you go out there, right, you want to get me start as fast as possible. Yeah, the nerves are there. Oh, that's without a doubt. I'm sure they were nervous as well. If they thought... Brazil were quite scared. You should have seen the Scotland team. But when you get there, you want to get me start. And so we had the Scottish national anthem, the Brazilian national anthem, the French national anthem. And I think there was another tune. I don't know what kind of tune it was, but it was going on forever, absolutely ever. Just wanted to get it started. But hopefully they'll maybe change it. I don't know. I don't know how they can. But I know they now, I'm sure, allow the players onto the park a wee bit to do. Because it also helps in soaking up the atmosphere when you can see the stadium full and everybody there and part of your warm up. You know, it's special. It's a special game, but I'm glad they've changed that. And I know that the reason for it is the opening ceremonies and all that kind of thing. Aye. Everything before the 2 years, I think there was parachutes coming in or something like that, you know. So, it was a memorable occasion. Sadly, for yours truly, it didn't end too well.
What about, was there any mixing with the Scotland fans, like when you were at the hotel, anything you can talk about for a sort of social perspective at the World Cup, or it was just off FITBA?
Aye, I could, but I'm not grass.
I need you to give me something, Tom.
Listen, we liked a wee social life and stuff like that, all the games. I'd like to go and play. I remember there was a few boys quite drunk in one of the, and it was Euros 96. Well, a certain player that played for somebody across the other side of the city. I went playing golf.
No, the English players you're talking about here,
I'm
is
only
it?
Saying, aye. In fact, I think he's been spotted a couple of times falling off of cars and stuff like that, you know what I mean? In celebrations.
And force me?
No, you know, have you not seen that one?
No.
Oh, you'll see it, yeah. I'll tell you later.
Oh, come on. You're going to kill me now.
So anyway, he played for Scotland, but he had an English accent. And played for the side of the city.
Right, okay.
Right. Oh, that could be a few of them, actually.
Aye.
Anyway, so, yeah, he I remember he was so drunk, and that was in Euro 96, that he says, can you play, and that was against Switzerland game, and he was outstanding that day. Absolutely outstanding.
Super Ali, is it?
No.
No. Golf.
Has he got an English accent?
No,
I don't know what kind of accent he's got now.
You're trying to guess.
I'm just going to need. Go and look in the videos. Somebody fell off a car celebrating, I think, a promotion. It was either a promotion or a cup win, a lower league club win. I think it's probably promotion to the Premier League for a team. Anyway, I'll give you enough clues.
I'm not going to get it. That's fine. Clues, and then move on. Then I think obviously after we won the league, and Neil came in at that point and started to sign fairly bigger defenders, I think we could call them, in Bobo and Youse.
And that's one of the reasons why I started being on the bench a few times. I wasn't a great nair when I was playing at the back. I think Martin liked the bigger boys. And even the following season, I played a few games, I got us into the Champions League. I played in the Ajax games. I get injured then, and then it was a big Bobo and Johan, and well, Vega went away. I think that's why Vega was signed, to get a bigger boy at the time to play at the back. For me, I was in and out of the team quite a bit at the time with Martin. So, if you weren't 6'7", I don't like to see, unless you were a forward. And even some of the forwards, John Hartson and Chris Sutton's and all that.
They were all big boys, I know, right?
Aye. But there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong. It has an asset. If you're as good a player as John had skill, and John Hartson and skill, and guys like that, you know, listen, it's an extra asset to have. I think maybe our team now miss it a wee bit when Keogh was playing, because of the physicality that these boys had. You know, Keogh's got other things in terms of what he can do. But that's, Martin went along that route of, I like seeing a bit of height, and I don't think anybody would mind that, you know, defenders or even one of your forwards, you know. That's why one of the reasons I think we signed Ida, you know, we'd let a bit of height. It's another option, it's a different option that we certainly have on our team. We've not been blessed with too many bigger boys in terms of the front players, and that doesn't matter if they're good enough. Well, as Henrik Larsson was smaller than me, and he could jump.
He could eat a ball, that's for sure.
Definitely.
You can't deny physics. I think it was a factor when we played the sort of McLeish's teams and Smith at the time. Aye. And with corners and set pieces, we were all sitting. But like you say, I think Martin O'Neill's team could play football. I think people forget how good some of the players were. That was a real golden era for Celtic fans.
Well, there was Lubo Maravchitz there, Alan Thompson, Stirling Petrov,
Paul Lambert, all boys that can pass.
Neil Lennon.
Well, no, you're a little better player than me, anyway.
Yeah,
and what was there when O'Neill came in? What was that like? Because for me, we talked about influential Celtic men earlier. He's in the top 25.
Listen,
he's
we've seen him and we know him. He's a very, very clever man, and he knows football. And he's backed up by his assistant at the time, John Robertson, who I think both of them won 2 European Cups. You know, so. They know what they're talking about. They knew what they're talking about. And I remember coming in and met him. I was on the treatment table that season, the previous season, the John Barnes season. I was injured for a good part of it with 2 back operations. So when I came in, I was on the treatment table, and Martin was asking me what do you think we need and stuff like that. And I think, well, don't think we need too much if you got some better players around about to bring them out, you know. I think he was one saying that he was trying to keep Mark Buduka. Mark Buduka was still there, and he was a good player, a great player actually. And Martin could have probably made him better as a player, and worked him as well probably as a Chris Sutton as would have done with Henrik, as how that turned out. So yeah, as well as and liking boys that are big, there's nothing wrong with that, you know. Especially when it comes to set pieces.
Aye, no, absolutely tremendous record. Even like when Steve Guppy and that came in, like everybody he signed made a difference, I think.
That's
and
right.
He's totally transformed the club.
Ah, Dida Gap was an outstanding player.
His pace. 50,000 or something, wasn't he?
For his pace, you know what I mean? And I like Dida as a player in terms of what he gave and what he could have, you know. You wouldn't see MD beating him in a sprint. And that certainly helps. I like to see that in players and having a wee bit of pace that you can maybe, as I did in a few occasions, make up for a few mistakes that and get back and tackled. So they brought in, as you say, a lot of players, and there's a lot of skill within the team as well.
Is there any players that you think are maybe underrated in terms of their impact to the club, because you mentioned there, obviously you're a defender, right, so you'll love watching your Maldinis and Parisis and all the rest of it, and that season we won the league, we only conceded I think 20 goals, so I think Rangers had scored a lot more than us, but they conceded a lot more than us. So like said, Jonathan Gold gets a hard time, Gordon Marshall, but is there players that you think are maybe, do you know, they should be maybe higher up in terms of the respect that they get?
In terms of which team? The 98 team?
Any team, any of the Celtic teams you were part of?
There was a guy that was unlucky and I think got a big injury. Was Morten Wieghorst, who was a very skillful player. I know he wasn't a defender, but a midfielder. Remember he done the Rabona, was it, up at Pittodrie when he crossed that?
I can't imagine.
It was for Reggie Blinker, I think, scored. He crossed that, I think that was in that season, 99. Excuse me, or was it Dr. Joe? Good question. But I remember that was one. But Morten had great skill for a big boy as well, and he was a really tall boy, and then he got the Guillain-Barré syndrome, I think, which really set him back massively. So he was one that you would say was somebody who didn't get the plaudits of everybody else, but I think maybe with that injury and a Martin O'Neill team, we might have had a bigger impact, you know.
What about a guy I was thinking about earlier, Rico Annone?
Oh, Rico.
I think when the game and we beat Rangers, he man-marked Brian Laudrup and didn't get a sniff for the first time.
That was Rico's ability, was as a man-marker, and that was solely what I think he was brought in to do, just as a defender. And he could defend. So you could sacrifice, you know, Rico and just, well, you go and close him out and do that. And that was a time when that happened quite a bit, especially Italian kind of players, they were renowned for that as being great defenders, and certainly Rico was a great defender, and he played his part in that season in terms of the team that stopped the 10, so he played a huge part in coming in and helping out.
You didn't teach him the forehand smash then, did you?
I refused to perform it and convinced myself. He must have watched me. No, I was going to say that was after it, the Ronaldo forehand smash. He could look after himself.
He looked like he was a big
boy. Aye, if he was a biker or something, when he came in with his motorbike and he'd get helped to get rid of that or something like that.
I'm sure
he had a motorbike.
This Ferguson, that was it, or John?
Oh, aye, way back to helping. No, you can't do that. You can't drive a motorbike, you know. Obviously, the skill of him, the motorbike, I think, you know.
One of the favourite ones I heard was when he signed Boric, and apparently he would walk up like through Brigton with the Celtic gear on, and somebody had to pick him up and go, you need to be a bit careful, you know. But he was
something else, I would say. I don't think there were too many characters like that in their teams, but there was a few nutters.
Who's the nuttiest then? Guess if you can go into the memory bank for us.
Memory bank? No, in terms of what they've done, there was stupid ones and just a wee sort of corner boy kind of stuff between Thompson and Sutton, you know, the English boy, the two English getting together, and the usual algae pans and all that kind of thing in the shorts, you know, that kind of your wife fronts or whatever, you know. You stupid things like that. I'm trying to think of anything else. Well, there's a lot of characters and, you know, wind-up merchants and stuff like that, but nothing really major. They didn't do anything to me. I had too much respect for everybody else, and they had too much respect for me.
They kept me out.
I didn't see any of these things happening.
You'd have had them kicked out. I didn't
go on some of the wee tours they had. I was a sensible boy. Some of them went away and we joined out to Dublin and stuff like that. I was a good family man.
Oh, fair enough.
I'll say no more.
You would do well under questioning, I think, Tom. We'll wrap up soon.
It happened one time with Martin, but that's another story.
Oh, no, come on, you need to use that.
No, I can't tell you this one.
Well, maybe I'll get on Elon and ask him maybe if he'll come on. Yeah. You're obviously an ambassador now, so I was going to ask you sort of what that's like in terms of, obviously Celtic fans will know about the sort of history and information of the club, but people who maybe Celtic fans maybe don't know, so the likes of, we played Barcelona, 125-year anniversary, and they're going down to St Mary's and all that, like, what's that like for you as a fan when these people are turning up, you know, all these European greats and... You're involved with
all
that.
Well, it's absolutely stunning, and very privileged to be able to hold that kind of position. But I'm in with some legends of the thing, and I'm still thinking about all my boys playing for my boys' club and stuff. Like that. I'm still seeing Roy Aiken, Danny McGrain, and Davey Hay, and all these guys that come in, and Murdo McLeod's coming in as well. So there's tons of people that I've seen in here, and I'm just blessed that I'm able to get in there and meet these people and still see them and call them as friends. So that's something that's I can say is the best things that's happened in terms of me. And I'm still loving every moment. And it's easy. A lot of people say these things are difficult or something. But it's easy when you're a supporter of the club to come and do that. It'd be interesting to see if we could get a supporter who was or somebody who wasn't. Would one of the foreign boys come in? But they might have their own team. They might go to some of that. But, I do so many things for the club. I help out with the foundation. Used to help with the Celtic Pools as a director. I've just recently resigned for that. But, if I can do anything, I can help along the way for them, for anything. I'm quite a nice guy.
Aye, no, honestly.
If you want to, just ask me, you know what I mean, and see what it takes you.
I forget her name now. We'll maybe cut sort of the 30 seconds of this out, but Tommy Sheridan's in, who's telling me it was the woman, I should have researched this a little bit, was working. She won the World Cup for like Italy or France or something. She was in the
Rose Riley.
I'd be interested. She's Rose Riley.
She's not within the club and more within the sort of women's department kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Aye. What's she like? Because she seems like a right kind of.
To be fair, I've not met her too often. Right. And a lot of, I think when I did see her, I think it was just like a wee talk table whenever I was introducing. And then the time we get out, you're talking to other people. So I didn't get a real chance. But what a story that is for Rose, that was rejected here by Scotland. I went over to Italy and played and won the World Cup.
I wasn't aware of it until Tommy sort of said, so I'm hoping that I can get in contact with her at some point. I'd love to speak
to
her.
I'm sure she would do that. I don't see her too often. I've not seen her too often at the games. That's maybe my fault in terms of where I'm
positioning yourself.
Where she gets in, So, it's a great time. I go around all the stadium and some of the players, people or some of the supporters saying good. And they keep reminding me of things that we won and stuff like that. So it's a blessing, isn't it?
Aye, no, what a life.
You always come in with a smile on your face. I'm that kind of character anyway and stuff, try to be positive and take the good out of things, Maybe naively at times, and stuff. But I try to look and see the good in everybody. But there's some nasty people of it.
What's that? Do you get any, don't want to say abuse, but... Talked about earlier, right? And if you go out in Glasgow for a drink or whatever, did you get much because you seem like you gave 100% when you were a player got a capsule of Scotland.
I had a story, somebody gave me abuse, and this for somebody across the city. But the guy he was talking to, I know him well, and he was telling me what he was calling me and stuff like that. How can you go and talk to him? And you think, well, has he ever talked to me? He might have come and say hello. What I mean, then no, I don't. For some of preconceived opinions of you, in terms of what you say or what you do, and they just don't like me as a Celtic supporter. And that's the plain simple fact. And that, you're not going to change their mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But any other people come, he's quite a nice boy, he does that. So, very approachable. And I'll talk to him, give him a chance and see how the conversation goes. If you like it, that's fine, then you can talk to them. But if you don't, you think, okay, you're, you know, no, have a mindset that's prepared to listen or whatever. Or, but you can, you know, there's nothing wrong with a wee bit of banter with people as well and stuff like that for your team. And you're certainly enjoying the banter. Yeah, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. That was one thing I wanted to ask you earlier and I never get a chance, I forgot. But what's your opinion on the goalkeepers stepping up as part of the first five and hitting penalties? Because obviously, big Joe at the weekend, but Ederson hit one for City the other night against Real Madrid.
Did he score?
Ederson did, aye.
Yeah. I don't have any problem with it. Because sometimes, goalkeeper, I don't know if Joe's the best, but from there, I'm sure he's worked on it. And in fact, they would do that many times in training. You know, if not just those who practice at the outfield players, but the goalkeepers will probably do that quite regular. You know, they'll strike balls into the net and try to face where we've got Baines, Egrist and stuff like that. So they'll try to face... They'll probably face each other in penalties and probably maybe there'll be competitions or they'll go away themselves. The goalkeepers are a special breed, you know, they've got their own wee love-ins and stuff and all that. The goalkeepers union and all that kind of thing, you know. Some managers hated them, right?
I think most
managers hated them, you know.
Well, I think the perception was we kind of struggled over the years with goalkeepers because Rangers obviously had Gorham and then it wasn't really until Boric came in that we were kind of like, this is our first real top.
I don't disagree with that, and no disrespect to the players, and I'm sure they would agree that of the goalkeepers, you know, can pick out field players, but of the goalkeepers that in my time, you know, he picked with Jonathan Gould for a season, he was great in the slump 98. Big Packie was coming to end his career. Gordon Marshall came in. And then who came in after that? Big Rab Douglas was key as well. He was in as well. So you wouldn't say we're blessed with an Arthur Boric or some of that, you know what I mean? So, yeah, as it is though, but we'd better players in our positions and we won because so many other players.
Aye. And just we'll touch on the future then, obviously. Brendan's back and we're performing pretty well, to be fair, recently. It's looking, all things are looking good.
There's still like everybody says, and you know, we're in a good position now because of a couple of recent results, but that does not guarantee it. And I remind people, and I don't want to put us in a downer just now, but I remind people when Craig Bellamy was here and we went and he scored, I think, a couple of goals at Ibrox, certainly one anyway, and we were 5 points clear, I think, in the running. Remember Leicester League? I'm sure that was Helicopter Sunday. Right? So let's not get ahead of ourselves. There's a lot of football we've played, a lot against a lot of teams, and there's a wee bit of tiredness maybe in some players at this time. There's also, you know, you look at the Aberdeen game, there was things that we could identify that we did not do as well. But you're not going to get that in every single game of the season. The most important thing, certainly in Cup, and was make sure you win the game, and we did that. I know it was in extra time, or sorry, it was penalties. You'd rather see, we'd, if it was a normal league game, we'd have been dropping points in that game. And that's unfortunately bad. But I'm sure, looking at the form of Rangers, and you would think they would drop more points in terms of how they played against Ross and Sangley. And we got an advantage at Celtic Park with the no fans and no opposition fans in. So, yeah, it's we're in a very favourable position, which is about 3 weeks ago wasn't the case. We were still in our own hands. It's even better now that scenarios can help if we win at Celtic Park. But I think if we win at Celtic Park, I think you can say that's just about done. If both teams win both games up until then and then we win that one.
Aye, well, we'd be...
I'd be confident to say that.
We'll be 6 points clear in about
with
goal however many goals.
Exactly, aye. So I would be confident by then. But because you don't want to get carried away and you don't sit with egg in your face, I know. You know, so you don't...
Aye, the arrogance has cost us, I think, in the past.
I hate arrogance. Some people have got it and all that, but it's something that wasn't part of my makeup, and I don't like to see it. I'd like respect from everybody who you play. And whatever sport that you get, and I don't like arrogant people.
It seems like the current group of players, like your McGregors and your Forrest and even Big Joe and that, I think they would be hammering that home on the players. Is that on that subject, is there anybody in your team or in coming up in the Scottish game, other teams that you're kind of keeping an eye on and thinking there's this who I like to watch or there's a right player there?
I don't watch enough of Scottish football to say that. I only watch when they play Celtic.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Occasionally, I'll see other games. In fact, it's generally Friday night and you're watching the Championship games and stuff like that. That's it. I don't really have an interest in who's coming on. I'll leave all those decisions to the management. They've generally done very good, very well in that department in terms of the players they identify. Some of them, you know, we've had some, you know, failures. But for the most part, I think they generally do okay. And so I trust in them, and hopefully that we will continue to get it right. More than not, you'll not get it right all the time, nowhere near. But if you can get a huge percentage of them are far better, then that'll give us a wee opportunity. It helps if we win the league this year with the money available. So it does afford you that better player if you can afford her. You know, guys, that, well, with the market, what market we're looking in now, the market is weird now. As I say to people, and you'll not believe it, in terms of some of the players, Paul Lambert that we got with Dortmund, who had won the European Cup the year before, we got him for $4 million. What would a European Cup winner, a Champions League winner be now? You know, if somebody's trying to buy a player like that, you know what I mean? You wouldn't get him for less than 40 million. At MD for less than 40 unless they're just about finished or something like that, you know?
I think
it. I mean, we're thinking of looking and say, well, what players, what can you, well, that's, well, we're supposed to be, if we win the league, you get 60 million for winning in the Champions League next year. So that's just about your money spent and the wages.
I reckon
that's just a transfer fee.
I reckon maybe if Andy Robertson wins it for Liverpool and then decides he wants a swan song, I think that's about the only chance of getting Champions League winner up back at Celtic Park, personally.
I think you'd actually get maybe a better opportunity of Keenan Tierney coming back. Well, you know, I don't know.
I like that.
I like that thing, aye. And he's that thing.
He's very much cut for the tomboyed mould, I think.
Aye, well, I seized that quite regular, and mother owned a couple of nights out that we have, charity nights and stuff like, you know, and birthdays, or 70th birthday last time I met him. I know the feeling it has for the club, you know, and he left, and I don't mind guys doing that, leaving in a situation that what he gave us, or the club got in return, that's fine. But for some people to play out of contracts and leave and we don't get anything for them, you know, it leaves a wee bit of sour taste in it, and you know what I mean? Apart from Henrik Larsson.
No, absolute legend. I think we'll call it there, Tommy, because I've taken about 90 minutes of your time, but no, honestly, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for coming in and doing this. I really appreciate it, and wish you well.
Paul. No problem. Thanks very much, Paul, and any time you want to have a wee chat. We could talk about other things as we go on. I'll tell you the rest of the stories now.
Once the camera's off, you'll be giving me all the private stories. But no, thanks again, Tom, and hopefully we'll catch up with you again, mate.